Greetings and good morning. Thanks so much for listening to Mountain Grown Community Radio, KVNF. My name is Eric Gould. It's 8 o'clock, and here is your local newscast for Friday, December 7th. A cyclist was killed in a car crash in Delta on Wednesday night. According to the Delta Police Department, 63-year-old Craig Warren Hampton of Delta was traveling east on Highway 92 on his bike, crossing the highway near Henry Street when he was struck by a pickup truck driven by a 60-year-old male of Eckert. Hampton sustained serious injuries and was transported to St. Mary's Hospital by CareFlight, where he later died. The officers and staff of the Delta Police Department send their condolences to friends and family of Mr. Hampton. This case is under investigation, and no further information is currently available. A new study says that a warming climate could cost the country's winter tourism industry as much as $2 billion a season. As Colorado endures a dry start to winter, the report by Protect Our Winters and the Natural Resources Defense Council says the country's ski and snowmobile industry is waning as warmer temperatures melt snow and revenues. The Denver Post reports that the analysis concludes that the winter temperature increase in the last 40 years, more than 2 degrees, is threatening winter tourism across most of the country. In a bad snow year, that can mean the loss of millions of dollars in revenues, ski visits, and the loss of thousands of jobs. Looking forward, the researchers urge immediate action on climate change, with government policies that reduce carbon pollution. But according to the Post, the report misses the mark in its analysis of Colorado, home to the most skiing in the country. The Post reports that Colorado did suffer from fewer skier visits in low snow seasons, but the researchers' conclusion that the state's resorts and resort communities lost $154 million in revenue and more than 1,800 jobs is not supported by local statistics. Report author Matt Magnuson told the Post that Colorado is sending some mixed economic signals, but Colorado hasn't been immune to the impacts of poor snow. The Post reports that local numbers show that Colorado's resorts swiftly adapt to low snow years. In a release, the National Ski Areas Association pointed to the industry's decade-old policy on climate change, with resorts nationwide working to reduce impacts, educate skiers, and advocate for climate legislation. In our regular sit-down with Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper, the Democrat gives us his take on statewide marijuana regulations and explains why he doesn't think the industry will be booming in the coming months. He also tells State House reporter Benta Berkland why he's not sold on a major overhaul to the state's child welfare system in the wake of child fatalities.
I'm here with Governor John Hickenlooper. Thanks for joining me.
Glad to be back.
First, I want to talk about marijuana. You've created a task force to help navigate marijuana regulations moving forward and legalization. Why was it important to have a separate group outside of the legislature examining this?
Well, we wanted to get all the stakeholders involved and make sure that this didn't get disrupted on party lines. I mean, this passed in El Paso County as well as Denver County. It passed by 55-45, a significant majority. So it's coming. We have to look at how do we best enact and implement what the citizens were voting for. And we want to make sure that we get public safety perspective. We want to get the legislative perspective, obviously, but we also want the citizens' perspective.
How much leeway do you see the state having when it comes to opening the floodgates versus being more measured about it?
To a certain extent, we've got to wait. No one's going to make massive investments in cultivation or distribution of this newly legal marijuana without seeing what the federal government's going to do. Right now, the law of the land passed by both houses of Congress and signed by the President of the United States is that marijuana is a legal controlled substance. There's just going to be a cloud over the legality of all this.
As you know, the Denver Post and Channel 9 News did an investigation on child welfare and found out that 40% of children who die of abuse and neglect in Colorado, at least in recent years, have been known to social services. There have been calls in the past for, you know, more state authority over the counties, and I know Democratic lawmakers are considering maybe a big overhaul. How open are you to significant changes?
Well, I'm certainly open to any change, but I think that the counties are as determined as anyone to improve the system. And no one's been able to demonstrate to me without a question that doing it with a total state control basis, taking that authority away from the counties, necessarily improves the system. You know, having the state take control, is that going to be more bureaucratic or less bureaucratic? It could go either way. And our goal right now, our system and the way the residents of our state have so far indicated that they desire the system to continue, is for the state to provide guidelines and the basic structure, but for the county to administer our child welfare program. So our goal is to say, all right, within that, how can we change the practices of the social workers who are dealing with child welfare and improve them so that the outcomes are significantly better? How do we get more transparency? So we now have a website and a database that people will be able to access. And ultimately, at some point, this will take a while to get there, on a county-by-county basis, we'll see exactly which counties are doing the best, which counties are doing the worst. That public information will provide real pressure on counties to improve their own systems.
In the past, you've talked about holding counties accountable. Is the state doing that now, and what does the state do?
Again and again, we have worked with dozens of counties, dozens and dozens and dozens of counties, and there is no flinching from the challenge at hand. And without exception, the counties are willing to embrace better training. The real key to remember is that any failure in the system is unacceptable. Right? This is one of those places we have a zero tolerance for failure. We just got to keep working at it until we get the number of flaws and the number of mistakes down to zero.
As you know, it's been a very dry, hot year. Is there anything you think the state can do to help ameliorate the situation? Obviously, you can't control the weather, but in terms of policies that might help moving forward depending upon what happens next summer?
We're already working hard on conservation and how do we do more with less. We have to assume, not being able to predict weather conditions this spring and this winter, we have to assume the worst and be prepared for another drought, as bad as it is to imagine. But if we have another drought year, we'd be fools not to be planning for it right now. So we are. We're out there looking, and you could build all the 10 more dams. It wouldn't do you any good right now because you can't fill them. They would certainly give you a little added protection when you have a drought. And you would have 6 months or another year where you could still continue irrigating crops. And in real terms and in real time, if we have another drought, it'll be very hard on the whole state.
Thanks. That was Governor John Hickenlooper. We appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Of course. My pleasure.
I'm Benta Brookland in Denver.
Montrose's recycling will soon be headed to the San Miguel Area Resource Recovery Transfer Station, also known as Smarts Park, in Ilium Valley. The Watch reports that the agreement between the City of Montrose and Recycling Center will help both entities reach their goals. Smarts Park needed more volume to be sustainable. Montrose's recycling will triple the volume the park receives, bringing it close to its optimal target of 4,000 to 5,000 tons, which helps offset annual operating expenses. The Watch reports that Montrose has been seeking a way to re-implement residential recycling since its former program was cut a year ago. Now, the city hopes it will save money by diverting some waste away from the dump and into the Smarts Park instead, which takes recyclables for free. The Watch reports that the new recycling system is more efficient for the city to operate, as well as being more user-friendly. All Montrose residents will be receiving 90-gallon recycling carts in which they can toss all their recyclable materials, except glass, for collection every other week. The program begins in early January. The Watch reports that the city has picked up the tab for the new carts, and residents will not see an increase in their trash fees for participating in the program. And now for a look at our local night sky from the Black Canyon Astronomical Society.
Decembers are typically cold, and it's hard to get motivated to watch the night sky. However, if the weather is clear on December 13th, skygazers may be rewarded by seeing many bright meteors in a dark and moonless sky. This is the Geminid meteor shower, the most reliable annual meteor shower. Meteors, sometimes called shooting stars, are actually debris from comets and asteroids that enter Earth's atmosphere at high speed. The Geminid shower consists of icy and rocky debris from the asteroid Phaeton, a 3-mile-wide chunk of rock and ice that orbits the Sun every 1.4 years. Most astronomers believe that Phaeton is the core of a baked-out comet. When comets and icy asteroids enter the inner solar system and are heated by the sun, they expel debris in geyser-like eruptions. Such debris has been distributed over the entire span of Phaeton's orbit. On December 13th, we on Earth will travel through this debris. Then, little bits of Phaeton will enter our atmosphere at 80,000 miles per hour. As this debris becomes superheated by its encounter with the air, it will glow and vaporize within a second or two, and we will see meteors. The best way to see Geminids is to pick a dark, open area and relax in a very warm sleeping bag. Then, look high in the sky. While the Geminids appear to radiate from the constellation Gemini, they are visible all over the sky. Meteors are usually more frequent after midnight. If conditions are clear, you may see 20 to 100 or more Geminids per hour. If it's cloudy on December 13th, you can see lesser numbers of Geminids for a few days both before and after the peak. You've been listening to Western Slope Skies, produced by members of the Black Canyon Astronomical Society. I'm Art Trevina.
And that concludes your local newscast for Friday. For KVNF Mountain Grown Community Radio, this is Eric Gould. Thanks for being with me this week. Have a great weekend, and thanks so much for listening.